Welcome back to Shattering Myths. What I'd like to do today in our second hour, and we have Kirk with us again. And if, Scott, I don't have my switchboard up. If you could make him live, I'd appreciate it. Okay, great. Thank you. What I'd like to do, Kirk, is I want to finish the last statement and Yosha's discussion with Nicodemus.
Okay.
And then I'd like to actually review the basis of the individual who prompted this discussion's objection.
Okay.
That was circumcision, was it not?
Yes, sir.
All right. Why don't we continue with Yahuwkanon 3, and then let's begin to talk a bit about circumcision and see if it is a if there's some wiggle room there, if there's a way to interpret circumcision as anything other than the sign of the covenant and the fifth of five requirements, if you're a man, to participate in the covenant. Although it really is it's not the requirement as it's presented in the Torah isn't just for men. That doesn't mean that women should be circumcised, by no means. It means that it is Yahweh asks parents, mothers, and fathers to circumcise their sons on the eighth day. So it is a parental decision, and it's something actually the mother would be more privy to, because it's a parental decision that reminds the parents to raise their children so that they come to know Yahweh, and that so that they are encouraged to choose to be part of his family. They know what the terms and conditions are of the covenant, and they choose to participate in it.
Right.
Vast preponderance. I would say that there's not even one in 100,000 people, and maybe not even one in a million people, who could tell you the five conditions for participating in the covenant. What do you think?
I would agree with that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So if you don't know what they are, how in the world are you going to agree to
them?
Yeah. Right. And if you don't participate in the covenant, that's the thing that Yahuwkanon 3, John 3, was so important to work through, is Yosha didn't begin with salvation. He didn't get to salvation until he was, well, this discussion actually began in the second chapter of John, and he was all the way through about the 17th statement before the word salvation was even mentioned.
Yeah.
And salvation is not even mentioned in the 16th verse that they're talking about. That's eternal life. Well, eternal life is about Passover, and that's about Yosha being on the upright pole, which is why he equated eternal life to Moshe raising the snake on the pole from the Torah. So salvation wasn't even mentioned in the 17th statement.
Can I make a quick comment before we begin?
Sure, please.
Yesterday, Terry said, she said, I can see why that you might have a view about all this is overly like a word worship and all that sort of thing. Yahweh doesn't speak English, and it's a blind sort of me. Yahweh doesn't speak English. He doesn't speak Greek. He doesn't speak Latin or any of those other languages or Farsi or anything else.
He's only communicated to us in one language.
And one language is Hebrew. And if you're really serious about figuring out what he has to say, and we have been bombarded our entire lives with poor translations and contradictory translations.
Right.
I've dealt with scholars with the PhDs and all that sort of thing from Stanford, and they lie to you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first hour of this program, you understand everybody's lying to you.
Yeah, that's the purpose of it. Right.
You know,
don't trust them.
So I can't think of anything more important than reviewing these words and trying to figure out what they actually mean. And can I give you one quick example of why?
Yeah.
We came home last night. When I was teaching a class last night, a young man came in. He brought pictures of his child. He just had a baby boy, Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And he still came to class. I think he wanted to get away from it all. But for a couple hours, he came in and he showed me this picture of the baby wrapped up on a bed. And he's lying there. His arms are dangling down. He's looking at the baby face to face. His hands are laying down and stretched out with his palms open on both sides of the baby, cradling the baby. And if that's not a yod, you could, you know, it was just
a yod moment, which means
right,
hands.
It really was. And I thought to myself, you know, I was brought up where you fear God, that fear God symbol thing from Christianity.
Right.
And I would have never associated that image with Yahweh baroking.
Right. Kneeling down in love.
Kneeling
to
down
lift us
in
up.
Love to lift us up with his open arms.
Yeah.
And that was just like a perfect Yah moment. I mean, I just thought, wow, that is really cool.
Let's speak about both of these two. The second first.
Mm-hmm.
Humankind was conceived according to Yahweh in his image. All right. So we were conceived in his image. So what is it about us that is unique? What is it about us that reflects something that is vitally important to Yahweh's nature? Well, the first of those things is that we are an upright animal. We're really the only upright animal. Yeah, you know, occasionally a chimp can walk upright, occasionally an ape will walk upright, but for the most part they don't.
No.
We're really it. And there's two, to emphasize this, there's two people standing upright in Yahweh's name. It's the only letter that's repeated. It's a person standing upright.
Mm-hmm.
Being upright. You know, there's so much to this concept of being upright.
Right.
You know, standing up, not groveling, not slithering on the ground, not crawling on the ground, not being under the ground, not being under the water, but standing up. It just, you know, standing up for what's right, throwing your back against what's wrong, having some character, some backbone. I mean, all of this is really essential to knowing Yahweh's nature.
Mm-hmm.
The next is that when you're on your feet, I mean, you're engaged. You can go someplace.
Right.
And that's what Yahweh is about, going places. It's about discovering and doing stuff together. Okay, so we're an upright animal. The next thing is that we're the only animal with really that has an opposable thumb to the four fingers. So we got five fingers in our hand. There happen to be five terms and conditions of the covenant. There's five benefits of the covenant. Don't think that's by coincidence. But we have an opposable thumb in our hand. But what does that design enable us to do?
Grasp hold of something.
Absolutely. And what are we talking about grasping hold of?
Or his hand. Walking with.
You betcha. You know how many hands there are in Yahweh's name?
There's five.
Five. Five terms, conditions of the covenant. Five benefits of the covenant. There are five hands in Yahweh's name. The two that are uplifted and the two individuals. And Yahweh's reaching down and out to us through them. And they happen to be Abraham and Sarah. All right, so you've got this opposable hand. It not only enables you to grasp and therefore to lift up your children and to be lifted up as a child,
right,
but also to write, to turn the pages, to unfold, unfurl a scroll, to turn the pages of a book. It enables you to engage, particularly to read and to write. It's a very hands-oriented scenario. You're always using your hands when you're reading because you're holding the book at the proper focus distance from your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So your hands are always engaged, and your hands are, of course, engaged when you write. And so the hands are essential to this. We were designed with eyes that can see, observe, ears that can listen, to hear. We were given two of each of those and one mouth to respond.
Mm-hmm. Heavier emphasis. Hearing.
You betcha, and seeing. And seeing. Don't babble on, as Paul says, about sneezing. Yeah. Yeah, God's smarter. You know, if the choice is to listen to yourself babble or listen to God instruct you, you're better off listening to God. All right. What else about us? A lot of animals, men and women, male and female, come together. Well, we come together, but we choose one another not in for any other reason other than compatibility for relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is unique to humankind. We choose one another not just because, you know, we can croak the loudest or have the biggest set of horns, but because of compatibility for relationship. Well, that's exactly what Yahweh chose. He wants us to choose to have a relationship with him. We actually get married. Bereth, covenant, is a marriage vow. We build homes. Now, there's other animals that build homes, but we really build homes.
Yeah, we live in them year-round.
Yeah, we build homes and we live in them year-round. Yahweh has invited us to live in his home. We conceive children. We conceive life, just as Yahweh conceives the children that participate in his family, spiritual children, and we nurture those children. We begin initially on milk, and then we give them solid food. But we provide the nourishment for them, just as Yahweh does through His Word. And we care for them. We sacrifice for them. We do everything we can to lift them up, to make them better than we are. It's exactly what Yahweh is focused on. And the very interactions between a father and a child, and lifting up that child, that image that you saw, that is the very image of Yahweh and what He wishes to do with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we were created in His image so that we would understand family and love and home and relationship and conceiving children and raising them and nourishing them and instructing them. Every aspect of that, for His Torah, means instruction. Every aspect of that reflects Yahweh's prime objective, the core of His nature. So, hugely important to recognize that we were conceived to understand the prime objective, which is the covenant, the family relationship. Now, you mentioned that Yahweh only speaks Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
Now, could Yahweh speak to us in English? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
He could speak and we could understand it as they did.
Yeah, absolutely. Did Yahshua ever speak English?
No.
Did he ever speak Greek?
No.
The only language we know for certain that he spoke is Hebrew, and he may have spoken some Aramaic. It's a little difficult to know whether or not he spoke Aramaic, because the one place where he is transliterated, allegedly speaking in Aramaic, is in the Christian New Testament, and it's really highly unreliable. But beyond that, the difference between Aramaic and Hebrew is really tiny.
Yeah, it's like Spanglish, you know.
Yeah, it's really, it's like you have kind of a southern drawl. It's almost like the...
What did he say?
Having a Bostonian speak to an Alabamian is the subtlety of the difference. They're really very similar languages. And particularly if you translate part of Daniel, which was about a little less than a quarter of it was written in Aramaic while Daniel was in Babylon, and three quarters was written in Hebrew. That transition from Hebrew to Aramaic is really subtle. We'll be back.
Okay.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. So the next aspect of that, we're going to address what Terry said. Terry happens to be the principal model of Kirk and the brains of the operation. You met her because you drew her portrait in your first encounter.
Yeah.
Kirk, for those who don't know, is an artist. She's the brains of the operation. She has said that Yahweh speaks Hebrew. You know, and that's when I bring this up, I'm going to agree with your wife. You're of course going to agree with your wife because that's the smart thing to do. But
yeah,
I'm going to agree with your wife. Yahweh speaks Hebrew. Full stop. He speaks Hebrew. Yahusha speaks Hebrew. If 100% of their revelation to us is in Hebrew, even the one line where he's alleged to have spoken Aramaic, he's quoting a Hebrew psalm. Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me? And so, if you want to understand what he said, why would you go anywhere other than the language that he chose to reveal himself to us? You know, did Yahweh say that he and his word were synonymous?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not just an individual of his word. He and his word are one and the same.
He's the living word.
He is the living word. And so, if he is the living word, you need to understand the vocabulary he revealed himself in and the language.
Yeah.
And then you get to what we talked about in yesterday's program. There's some really, really unique aspects of Hebrew. It's not just about the exacting meanings of the words and getting the meanings right that we talked yesterday about Kodesh, always rendered in your English Bibles as holy, it doesn't mean holy. I mean, set apart. Set apart is a profoundly important concept. You have no chance whatsoever of understanding who Yahweh is, who the set apart spirit is, and who Yahusha is, and how those two manifestations are actually one. Unless you understand the concept of set apart, you can't understand the invitations to meet with God, the Shabbat, the Torah, the covenant. You can't understand anything, including Yahweh's name. All of which he calls Kodesh, set apart, unless you understand what set apart means. And are you going to understand it if you're reading this in English and you see the word holy?
Never come close.
Never come
close. I read it my whole life.
Right. Never come close. The key to understanding who Yahweh is, getting to know him as he revealed himself, the key, the bottom line in all of it, is taking the time to understand Hebrew. If you're not interested in doing that, then you're not interested enough to get to know God. Now, Kirk, is it hard in the sense of, wow, I just don't have the mental capacity for it, or is it time consuming, and that if you want to do it, you've got to be willing to invest a lot of time?
Well, it's more the latter, but I mean, initially it's pretty tough because it's to some of us that not good with foreign languages. But I don't have to speak. You learn it to speak it. Mm-hmm. I learn it to read it, so I understand what the words are, independent of everyone, including you. I want to know exactly what he says and feels, so I'm very, very confident of exactly what he said, or as close as I can get to what he said in my little brain. So,
you are a perfect example of Shamar, of observing. You want to read it. You want to observe it. You want to see what the letters say. Whether or not you can speak it is irrelevant to you.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, it's irrelevant to me. I want to read it so I can closely examine and carefully consider what God is saying, because not only can I process the written word seven times faster than we can process the spoken word, but with the written word, I can really take my time also and examine everything. I can see it in a big picture, and I can go down and investigate the smallest strokes of the letters.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much better.
And I didn't grasp quite what you meant, or on the level that you meant it, when you said years ago, you were saying, you don't talk much to God, you listen, and he really is talking to you when you're doing this.
Yes.
He really is. I mean, little things come to you that are just like, he's like saying, hey, dummy, here, look at this. And he comes to you and you go, ain't that brilliant, what he said.
Yeah, there's a reason Yahusha said, don't be like the hypocrites and pray in public and go on and on. It's the reason why Yahweh never asks us to pray to him, ever. It's the reason why Yahweh asks us to listen to him and to observe what he had to say. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. There are lots of reasons, Kirk, that we have to, absolutely have to. I mean, it's an absolute requirement that we observe and listen to what Yahweh had to say in Hebrew if we want to know who he is and understand what he wants and what he expects. And that is because of words like holy and set apart from Kodesh. They're so poorly rendered, they're so errantly rendered in English that if we don't take the time to look at the meanings in Hebrew, there's no chance to understand. I mean, you can be trapped in the Babylonian Trinity until you come to understand what set apart means. Once you understand what set apart means, then Yahusha is just set apart from Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
The set apart spirit is set apart from Yahweh, not a distinct, unique individual.
No.
But you've got to understand set apart. Another great term, mikra.
Mm-hmm.
Mikra, and the plural is mikre. That is the title, the name that Yahweh gave to his seven invitations to be called out and to meet. Now, if you were to read it in your English Bible, you would read holy convocations.
Yeah. Which, who the heck knows what that means?
What is a convocation? But beyond that, it's, a convocation is not what he's
it's a party.
Doing here. And you, so you've got to look, Mikra, all right. The first time that Yahweh uses Mikra, he defines the term. He says it's based on the verb kara. And so you look up kara. And if you're superficial, you'll see kara says to call out. And then, and if you're a little bit more diligent, you'll say, all right, so call out. Well, call out and set apart are kind of interesting concepts. You're called out from the family of man to live with God. The first instructions to Adam and Chawa. You leave your father to become husband and wife, you know, to raise your own family. You're called out. So you're called out of the world into Yahweh's home. All right, so that's pretty important. And it's also Yahweh calling out to us. Well, I want to hear what he has to say. So, Kara, it's just superficially is the call out.
It's like a town crier, you know. There's a big announcement coming, come out.
Right, yeah, exactly. Except this town crier happens to be God.
It happens to be the, you know,
just happens to be God. Now, the next meaning, if you look a little bit deeper, you'll find that, so these are called out meanings. The next thing you'll find is that Kara means to invite. Well, that makes a lot of sense in the context, because Yahweh says that these mikrei are chag. And my guess is you're familiar with the Hebrew word chag.
Mm-hmm.
Means to celebrate, to party.
Party, yeah.
To have a festival feast. So you're invited to a party. Well, in convocation, there is no hint of being called out, and there's no hint of being invited, is it?
No.
With Yahweh, there's always two ways that you can meet him. You can either be invited into his home, and he is your father, and you're his child in love. Or you can meet him, be summoned to him, and summoned before the judge, and he will convict you, and you will spend eternity separated from him.
Yeah.
Those are the two ways you can meet him. So what is the other aspect, the third definition of Kara is to summon. So if you don't answer the invitation to meet with God, you'll be summoned before the judge.
Yeah, not a good thing.
Not a good thing. All right. So those are the first three. You know, it's really interesting. So we're invited on this day to be called out, and then the next meaning is of Kara is to read, followed by recite. What do you suspect we're supposed to read? Why don't we read the invitation? Where is the invitation?
Yeah, in the Torah, of course.
In the Torah. So to read the invitation and to recite it, because, you know, not everyone is going to take the time to read. So recite it. Recite it out loud so others can listen to it. That's what we're doing right here. So it means to read and to recite. So, man, we've gone from convocation, which means nothing.
Yeah.
To invitation and summon, to God calling us out and calling out to us, to reading and reciting. And those are just the primary connotations of Kara.
Yeah.
If you look at the secondary connotations of Kara, you'll find to meet, to greet, and to welcome.
Yeah.
Now, does it take a little time to look up the verb that Yahweh says forms the basis of his seven invitations each year to be called out and to meet with him, to be welcomed into his company, to party with him, to read and recite his word? Yeah.
Sure.
Yes, it does. If you're superficial, you're going to get from convocation to called out. And from there, it's just how much more diligent, how more closely are you going to observe?
That's strictly up to you, but, I mean, it's worth the trip.
It's worth the trip. Now, all of a sudden, you have a comprehensive understanding of what Passover, of what unyeasted bread, of what firstborn children, of what the promise of seven, Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, and Shavuah are all about, don't you?
Yes, it's not some Jewish festival or some Jewish...
No. No. But Yahweh says they're his.
They're his.
They're his invitations.
Come to my party.
They're his parties. In fact, you've actually defined Teruah.
Mm-hmm.
Kara itself defines the purpose of Teruah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, to be the troubadour, to be the herald, to share this message, to read and recite Yahweh's word, to call people out of the world. And so it's essential. There's no way you're going to make the transition from the Christian indoctrination that these are Jewish holidays, that these are part of Judaism, to these are Yahweh's invitations for us to be called out of the world and to meet with Him by reading and reciting His Word. There's no way you're going to get there if you don't take the time to understand what He conveyed in Hebrew.
Once again, where would you get it if you didn't go to the Torah? You can't get this out of the New Testament. It's absolutely, you can't even get a warped version of this out of the so-called New Testament.
Let me give you another word, Torah. If you read it in your English Bible translation, you're going to read law. But Yahweh says that the Torah is based on the verb, and in Hebrew, the action form of a word defines the meaning of the word. Which is what you'd expect.
Sure.
Yahweh, when he introduces the concept of his Torah, says it's based on the verb yara.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yara is Torah with a yod added to it that is Yahweh's hand. He's handing us this. And yara means the source from which instruction, teaching, direction, and guidance flow.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
From Yahweh's hand.
That ain't the same meaning.
So, you know, the difference between law and the source from which guidance, instruction, teaching, and direction flow
fatherly
are
advice.
Night and day. You know, teaching enlightens.
Mm-hmm.
It liberates you. It empowers you. Laws restrict you.
Mm-hmm.
They debilitate. They restrain. I mean, there couldn't be concepts more opposite than law and guidance, law and teaching.
Which is the same as light and darkness, which is what's leading into where we're going.
Right. So how are you going to know that if you're not looking at the Hebrew? If you're reading your English Bible, you're in place of Yahweh's name, which he says is the basis of salvation over and over and over again. If you don't know Yahweh's name, you aren't part of his family, and you aren't saved. And if you're reading your English Bible, you'll never see Yahweh's name, will you?
No. They absolutely get rid of it.
Yeah, it was replaced by the Lord, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And Yahweh, he uses the term the Lord all the time. And when he does, is he referencing himself?
No, he's talking about Satan.
Yeah, exactly. Because the Lord is the antithesis of a father.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they're just opposites. So if you don't pay attention to the Hebrew, there's no way you would ever know that.
No, not from English. Certainly not from the English Bibles.
No. And it goes on and on and on. Covenant's a great one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what in the heck's a covenant?
Well, there's a marriage contract in this concept.
But well, it is. But how would you know that if you didn't know the Hebrew?
No.
How would you know that the covenant, the Bereth, is based upon home and family if you didn't look at the Hebrew and recognize that all you've done with Bayeth to get to Bereth is you've added a Rosh, the Hebrew R, which is a family for those who are observant, who think about this, who ponder this, us people who you know, look at the words and listen to him and think about it and respond to it. It's the only difference between family and home and this family-oriented covenant, the Bereth. How would you know that if you didn't look at the words in Hebrew?
You just can't get there from there.
No. You just can't.
And that's why
you are precluded. I mean, I'm going to go so far as to say you are precluded from knowing who God is and understanding what he wants and what he expects if you don't take the time to listen to what he had to say, to consider what he had to say in Hebrew. And the reason for that is that religious institutions have deliberately and knowingly
trashed it.
Yeah, trashed it. Misled people to promote their own religious agendas.
Mm-hmm. And we'll find out that those are the ones who love the dark.
They are. Yeah, so Terry is right. If you want to know who Yahweh is, what he wants, and how to what he expects, how to engage in a relationship with him, you can't get there if you're not willing to spend some time looking at the Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
And the closer you look at the Hebrew, the more you learn. The more you know, the better you understand. And somewhere along the way, that's the beauty of Yahweh being equivalent to his word, being one with his word, is that somewhere along the way, you transition out of believing there's a God to knowing him. You transition from this faith that everything's going to work out to absolute understanding and total trust and reliance. And when you make that transition, everything just utterly changes. It's so relaxing. It's so comfortable. It's so reassuring. A marvelous place to be. And so many have rejected it.
Indeed.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Kirk, I would go so far as to say that every insight that we have come to embrace that reflects on Yahweh's nature and plan that really wasn't either known at all or commonly known, most not known at all, prior to us taking his testimony seriously in Hebrew and genuinely trying to understand what he had to say, that none of it came from any place other than a careful analysis of the words that he chose to use. And I would also just underscore what you said. You know, when I was a Christian, I babbled on to God. I mean, I asked him for everything under the sun, you know. Boy, I mean, I wanted him to intervene and in the free will of others to provide, you know, everything that I was interested in. And I never listened to him. And I did all the public prayers, and I was constantly babbling. And I've gone to the point where, boy, we're now having a marvelous conversation. And we have a great relationship, communicating all the time. But it's mostly because I'm listening to him. You know, he is a lot more articulate, entertaining, informative than I am.
Yeah, he's
obviously. But that's but when you come to that realization, and then you're there. And the other aspect of it is, when you come to know Hebrew, particularly when you look at, as you do, graphically, like at Yahweh's name, and you see the two people standing up, not bending down, and they're standing up beside the letter Wah, which means to increase, to add to, to secure, to enlarge. And you see that next to the hand that is reaching down and out to lift us up, and you realize, this is a father and his children.
Mm-hmm.
It just changes everything, doesn't it? I mean, you don't,
sure.
I mean, the more I've come to know Yahweh, the more impressed I am with him, the more relaxed I am around him.
Yeah, it's hardly fear of the Lord, huh?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, even you look at fear, it's from the Hebrew word yara. It can mean fear. Because, you know, if you don't come to know Yahweh as your father, then he's a pretty fearsome judge. Yeah. But the primary meaning of Yara isn't fear. It's revere. It's respect. But you wouldn't know that unless you took the time to look at the Hebrew. I mean, what is the first letter in Yara?
It's a Yod.
It's a Yod. Is that Yod? Is that a clenched fist?
Hardly.
No, it's an open hand, isn't it?
Open hand.
Yeah. So it's, you fear a clenched fist.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the loving embrace of a parent that reaches down with an open hand to a child.
Right.
And so you ought to know that Yara can't be feared just by the way that the word is written.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Yare, isn't it? I mean, what's the second letter? The Rosh.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
the Rosh.
I was trying to put an A in there. But,
yeah. That's the Rosh.
Yeah, and the engaged head.
Yeah, that's the engaged. That's the thinking individual. And the more you think, the more you observe, the more closely examine, the better you listen, the more you process what Jana was saying, the more you're going to recognize he's Dad reaching down in love. That's why the first time that he tells us about Adam, we find that Barak, he gets down on his knees in love to lift him up. It is just so relaxing. I got a letter the other day because, we've got some irritants out there that are trying to undermine everything that has been, and everything's been written and everything's been said, and so many thousands of people around the world who have benefited. And this individual says, by taking the time to explain what the words mean, I've come to know who God is. I know his name. I know what he's like. I'm part of his family. He makes absolute sense. For the first time, everything is logical and it's rational and it's consistent. And all of the objections and all of the confusion is just gone.
Yeah, you answer your own argument.
Yes.
You truly do. You don't have to go out.
Yeah, Terry's right. In Hebrew, Yahweh has provided the answer to every important question, including that he exists, who he is, what his name is, what he wants, what he's offering, what he expects, how do we engage to participate in a relationship with him. It's all there. Thank you, Kurt.
Yes, I see you. See you later.
Thank you, Terry, too.